Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me today in the University Matters studio quite a large group. In fact, I think this is probably one of the largest groups I've ever had on my radio programs. Two of the people with me are Erasmus coordinators, that's Angelica Ajus and Maria Vella, whilst the other four are Erasmus students who've come to tell us about their experiences. The students are Julia Mifsud, Matthew Mitzi, Stephanie Ganado and Nicola Abela Garrett. Thank you all very much for coming to the programme. First of all, from Angelica, perhaps, a bit of an overview of the Erasmus programme. I know that we've spoken about it before, but every year new people are eligible, and people who perhaps wouldn't have been so listening last time will have their ears pricked up to hear all about it this time. So do give us a bit of an overview of the program.
Under the Erasmus program, there are four actions. Mainly two actions involve students and the other two actions involve staff. Now, under student mobility, there are another two actions. There is student studies and student placements. Now, under student studies, students can spend a semester abroad, and they can follow credits instead of following them here at the University of Malta. They can follow credits abroad, and they also do the exams at the hosting university. On the other side, under placement, students do similar training. For example, placements are open for radiography students, physiotherapy, more for training. And also, the students do not follow credits, they just do training. When they come back, usually, they get ECTS for the training they do abroad. Then, on the other hand, under staff mobility, there are two actions. There is the teaching assignment mobility and staff training mobility. Now, under the teaching assignment mobility, academics from the University of Malta can apply, and they can go and teach minimum 5 hours and also minimum 1 week at the hosting university. The teaching program should be an integral part of the day-to-day teaching of the hosting university. Then under training, staff training, the eligible persons are administrative and technical, where they also do training. Normally the minimum period is 1 week and the maximum period is 6 weeks. They receive, for example, if a technical officer from the Faculty of Engineering decides to go for training at the hosting university, then this person can apply the methodology or the training that he received at the hosting university at the University of Malta. And normally people go for 1 week.
There are definite objectives, obviously, for this type of program. Angelica has spoken about this training and bringing that training back to Malta. What about these objectives, Maria?
They reinforce the European dimension of higher education institutes from one university to another. They promote, as Angelica said, both teaching staff and student mobility. Students can go around in Europe, they can have another culture, they can make friends over abroad, they can study in a different university. And they also, we have the cooperation between the universities, which is instilled and always becoming more effective. Like, we have the opportunity to go abroad, meet our coordinators who we work with on a daily basis. So we've got a lot of objectives in just 1 week.
And apart from outgoing, we receive as well both students, even academics, and also administrative staff. We have continuous requests of administrative staff wanting to come here at the University of Malta to receive training, and we have to receive them. We can't reject them. So. Especially in summer. during the summer period, we receive a lot of requests.
An English-speaking university in the Mediterranean, yes, I suppose, is always a lot of effect, apart from, obviously, our good reputation. We've spoken about the benefits, really, of studying, the objectives, but also the benefits of actually studying abroad, and perhaps we'll hear more about that from the students. Angelika, before we move on, what about the countries that the staff or students can choose from? These are countries with whom, or individual universities with whom we have bilateral agreements.
A student or a staff can't go abroad without the bilateral agreement. So the first step is that a bilateral agreement should be signed between the sending institution, which is the University of Malta, and the hosting university. Then, when it is ready, students can go and even staff can go on these exchanges. So that is the first step. A list of placement for both students and staff is on our website. So it depends if I'm from the Faculty of Arts. Students have to visit our website and click on Faculty of Arts. And also for academics.
What about the language question? Obviously, well, I would imagine that the credits that they're going to be choosing would be in English, but there are, I think, universities where, where they have credits in the language of the country.
It depends on the country. For example, most countries like Spain, Italy, France, Germany, even though in German, you have some credits which are in English. They must speak in their national language, so some students might
find
have a
it difficult.
Bit of a problem to choose. And these countries, even though we've got students who go each year, for example, sent to France, even we had law students going in Spain 2 years ago. So there are some students who do try and go
and to learn the language before
going abroad. But very,
to study a technical subject, it's difficult in a foreign language other than English.
Well, let's start on a little round of the students, because they told me that they have enough anecdotes to fill a couple of programs. So we'll start off with Julia Massoud. You went to Liverpool, University of Liverpool.
Yes, I went to Liverpool Hope University, which is another university there's too. And for me, this experience was the best of my life, I probably think. I always wanted to go, and it's that experience that for you, you'll become so independent by it. It's something you have to live on your own. You have to buy your own food. You have to fend for yourself. You literally have to become mature. Without you wanting to be it, you'll learn from different lecturers that you don't find here, different experiences. It was one of the best experiences, being there, having to pay rent for a flat and making sure you have enough food and making sure you go to Tesco's around the corner and
do all the things that probably your parents would have done.
Exactly, making sure the washing is done. And no, it was a great experience being there.
The, I won't say problems, let's call them challenges. Mm-hmm. What do you think really were the challenges that you had to learn how to cope with?
Well, going there, I mean, it was very stressful, making sure you get your credits correct and making sure that they're accepted over there. But they really helped us in the office, and even we used to call up Liverpool Hope University. I used to call them and I used to talk and try to understand their accent, and I used to go, please, make sure, and they were very helpful. And when we get there, it was fine. It was just, I remember our first day, I'll never forget it, we didn't have a pillow, we didn't have a quilt. It's, 14,
but it was cold.
12 degrees in the evening, and it was only September, and then being in snow later on in December. And then we, 10 o'clock in the evening, we actually found a quilt and a pillow. It was me and
my
friend.
You certainly felt better, I'm
sure. Yes, I'm sure.
What about the subject itself? You're studying psychology and theatre,
yes.
I think.
Uh-huh.
How did the credits that you did there, how did they sort of compare? Was the methodology different?
I mean, it was a very different, like for psychology here, there's around 100 to 200 students in a lecture room. While over there, we were divided, we were only 30. So there was much more attention on you. I mean, the lecturers used to call me into their office, make sure that everything was okay, and that I was following, and even for our assignments, we had to do assignments over there. We didn't have examinations. And they used to come and they used to explain to me and make sure that we understand everything. And then we had our deadline. And I mean, for us, it was such a different, their teaching is very different, I think, from ours, because they become, it's not as formal. I think here lectures are a bit more formal, while over there they're a bit more informal, telling us about our day and just have, I mean, the British are the British, so they're a bit more, you know, easygoing and even a bit more creative. For our theatre course, it was more like, I mean, I remember our last day we had to deconstruct fairy tales, and so it's a quite a different experience. And it was, coming back, you'll go, I really learned a lot. I really learned a lot.
That's a great outcome, actually. And you, Matthew, you went to Copenhagen.
I absolutely loved it, and I'm very much in agreement with what Julia said before, is in the challenges and having to go. We went up in September, and actually in August, in the second part of August, and when we arrived, the temperature was 17 degrees lower than Malta. That was the first challenge, actually, fighting against getting a cold, yeah.
What about finding accommodation? Because I know that this has been an issue in the past. Sometimes some universities are quite generous about use of their halls. Others don't give that opportunity. In your case, how did you find accommodation?
Well, Copenhagen is a very particular city. I mean, in our year, there were 7,000 freshers coming from all over Denmark into University of Copenhagen. And Copenhagen has four universities, so if you were to multiply the number, it would be quite substantial. There is a bit of a problem in Copenhagen at the moment with accommodation, but that makes the whole experience a lot nicer. Because we spent the first week in a hostel trying to find accommodation, and we befriended so many people over there.
With the same problem.
Yeah, everyone was in the same boat, basically. Mm-hmm. We all used to find accommodation together, we used to share adverts, and you get to know the city really well, you get to know the people really well. So it was a very good launching pad. Being homeless for a week was actually a good idea.
Excellent.
My mother begged to differ, but...
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? So yeah. Worry your mother. And once you found accommodation, then how did you sort of move on with the new semester?
The semester was a bit challenging because it started in September, and usually, like over here, it's a bit relaxed to start, and then it peaks. Over there, you had to work, we had to work all throughout. We were given readings all throughout, which was very challenging, very nice, a very nice academic experience. And as Julia was saying, classes were really small. There was a numerous classes, first come, first served. People had to apply, and classes only had a maximum of 30 students. I wanted to go to Copenhagen because I wanted to learn law and economics and get an exposure to financial law.
And they specialise in that particular subject there?
They do. Mm. And it's taught by practitioners and academics, so there's the right mix between academic background and the practical experience. We did visit law firms and the Copenhagen Stock Exchange, so we get a lot of exposure. And also, studying an international environment was absolutely great. In our class, we had people from Kenya, from Brazil, from Canada, people working in law firms in Toronto, people working in law firms in Australia and Sydney, people who traveled around Africa doing humanitarian work. So it was such a great experience sharing our ideas with these people. And it's actually a very big boost in self-confidence. Because at the end, then you have to sit with two examiners, one coming, one being your lecturer and the other examiner being a sensei coming from practice. And the examination system is basically a chat about the subject. So, nothing to write down, no assignments. Just show me how much you know. Let's have a chat. Let's be relaxed.
How much you don't know.
Let me try and hide.
You become expert in orals. You become experts at trying to give you the impression that you've really done all the reading.
I think you become a great actor, yeah.
Well, I'm sure you did all the reading.
We tried our best.
What about choosing the credits? Because this has in the past been a bit problematic with certain faculties that were very, I don't think I'm sort of uncovering any sort of deep secrets here. Not all faculties were open to the idea of their students going abroad because they felt that they might miss out on some of the credits that their peers were doing here in Malta. So how did you manage to balance that equation?
As the law faculty, I think we're quite lucky in the fact that we have the first semester of sixth year where the courses are, there's no courses basically, there's just one optional course which students can take. So we're actually encouraged to spend the semester abroad. Some people apply to work with the EU institutions, others go on Erasmus. And we found a lot of help, both from the Erasmus office over here locally, and the faculty office, the Faculty of Laws. Mm-hmm. We encountered a problem over there where we had to change some subjects because we thought the course description didn't really match what happened on the ground. And we communicated and they answered straight away, and it was great.
Yes, in your case, probably, yes, this isn't such a problem because you go in your sixth year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So more or less everything's done except for your dissertation at that point, so it wouldn't have been a problem. And so you've really started your legal networking already.
Yes. And I think that was a great thing that happened because we met people coming from Malta is a booming financial services industry at the moment. Over there, we met people who are coming from mature industries, as in like Canada and in Toronto, and people with experience in England. So you notice it's a big boost because coming from a small country which is growing in this area, professionally, is a big boost because you see that we have the right skills ultimately to succeed. So we do have the X factor over here ultimately. So. And that's really great.
And you could sort of benefit by the experience of people who've been there and have probably more experience than we do.
Yes, and we can also share knowledge, but most importantly, share personal experiences. Because ultimately, even in networking, I mean, networking might reduce the whole personal experience. It's ultimately friendship and sharing. Sharing the cultural challenge. I mean, Denmark, Scandinavia, it can be quite challenging as a region. It's completely different to Malta. People are on time. Once I had to meet a person at 7:30 in the morning, I received a call at 7:29. Where are you? You know, so it was just a complete
challenge. You have to change your mindset.
Yes. And that's my point. I think when us students go abroad, we have to be really open to the cultural change.
Mm-hmm.
That's a massive change, not just the weather. Even people behave, the way culture people behave.
Shock.
It's it's a culture shock, and
yes. Even the way you speak, clarity. People, what are you saying?
Yes, that's also. In fact, the language question. Turning to Stephanie now. Obviously, you did the course in English. I presume it was not in Swedish.
No.
But did you ever have a language problem when you were there in Malmö? I suppose when you went to the shop or the supermarket or whatever, did everybody speak English?
In Sweden, a lot of people speak English, so I was lucky in that sense. But everything is labeled in Swedish on the foods, for example. So the first time I went to the supermarket and I was looking around to buy, I was lost. Because I was like, which is milk? Which is yogurt? Am I buying cream? Well, I was really lost all the time, asking people, excuse me, which is not like normal milk, not full fat or this one, but most people speak English, so I was lucky. In Sweden, it's like us.
Well, you're a communication student,
yes.
So your communication skills should be very well honed already, and I'm sure you had to use them.
Yes.
What about the course itself? What were you looking for? Why did you go to Malmö?
Because, I didn't know much about Malmö and Sweden at all. My friend had gone 2 years before and she recommended it. She said it's really great, really fun. Plus, one of my lecturers was really fond of it, Dr. George Malia, who goes often. And he's like, yes, go, creativity-wise, it's great. And it really was. They really emphasize creativity and they believe all students are creative, which is something that I lacked. Like, I used to feel, am I creative? Always judging myself. I don't know why, but I've always been like that. And going there, they were all like, each and every one of you are creative, just be yourselves and whatever. And that really helped me come bring out.
What were the credits you did specifically? What?
I did 2 credits. One was designing communication processes for social change. And we had to work with this voluntary organization, Dromarnas Hus, it was called, that was working in this place, Rosengård, which is... I don't know, people look at it badly, and we had to try and change the way people look at it. We had to create a process of communication to try and change people's minds. Like, and we're working with this organization, very practical, very fun. We're a bunch of international students working on it, and we learned so much, and it was such fun. And then the second one was visual communications, and it was a mix of photography and design and... Again, focusing on creativity, and
it was a small group. How many students were you for
each
of the credits?
The first one was mostly international students. I don't think there were any Swedish students in that subject, and we're about 20 or 30. And the second one, there were quite a lot of Swedish students, and we're like 10 international students or 15.
Did you have to use technology for the visual one?
Yes, our computers and programs. Like, thank God I had the program from Malta, like in design and these things, because we had to design a book cover.
Sounds great. Sounds wonderful. Really exciting. What about practical challenges in Malmo? Were things smooth when you went there, or?
Before I went, I was very nervous because I went all alone. So I was like, am I going to make friends? Am I going to be okay? But fortunately, things worked out. I had a friend of a friend met me at the airport and took me to my accommodation, helped with my luggages. Then I still made no friends at this point. Then I met Dr. George Manier, who was there. And he told me, he showed me around, told me if you need quilts and pillows, go here. If you need your makeup, whatever.
Very useful.
It was really, really good. So that's as well. And I became sort of okay with being alone, because in the first 5 days while I was there, I hadn't gone to my student accommodation yet, because I didn't have it. So I had to, not the first five, the first three, I had to do everything by myself. I had to go to the university, find my faculty, I had to go to the person who had the keys for my accommodation, I had to buy my quilts and my food and everything. And I learned to
rely on your own resources, yes.
You know, well, before I was always, no, I don't want to be alone, and then I was like, I was keeping myself company, walking around, on my own, until I made my friends. And as soon as I made my friends, it was great.
I can imagine. Turning to Nicola, you're the last student in the group. You were in Canterbury, which is a city I know well, and it's very, very, very beautiful and full of students, of course.
It's exquisite. It is exquisite. It's a lovely place. I went on Erasmus for three reasons. The first being that many years ago, I made a promise to myself that at the age of 19, I will not be living at home. I made sure that I turned 19 off Maltese land. The second reason was because in my line of work, I'm doing theatre studies honours, and I want to become an actor. I need to, it requires me to be mobile and just leave the island for a bit. Well, there were many other reasons, really, actually, but those were the two main reasons. I did so many things which I couldn't do in Malta.
Like? Give us some examples.
I did not just, this was out of the course, this was something that they introduced. Okay, the university approached me with it. They introduced me to an independent theatre company, and I ended up doing two theatrical productions with them, winning two main roles on two very, very professional stages. And that was quite an achievement.
Gosh, that sounds absolutely great. Yes, what an experience.
I made contacts, and I know that once I graduate, I can go back there and start my career off over there. We'll continue everything.
What about the methodologies of the teaching in theatre studies? I mean, what credits did you choose to take?
I had two credits, which was physical theatre, and where I focused on Japanese theatre, and also places of performance. I had already done these in first year. But, as you said, the methodology was completely different. It was solely practical. So everything, we had to do a performance, and obviously we had to give an assignment. But a lot of the marks were allocated to the practical side of things.
And what were the facilities like?
Oh, well, for theatre studies, about this huge studio, this unique building, solely built for drama and creative students. And they have their own faculty as well. We had several studios in which where you can work physically and rehearse. The staff, you can address them by their first name, which was something that I couldn't get used to, because I'm used to calling them sir or professor with all, and I had to call them Tina or what was the other one? I forgot. But everything was on first name basis.
Yes, that's always a very difficult balance for university teachers, to keep that first name level, but also keep, that bit of distance as well. But they seem to sort of do it well in England.
They insisted they would take offence if you didn't email them at least once a week asking questions about the course. Mm. They had a system, a mini Facebook for the whole class. It was called Moodle, where you communicated on chat and you have a lecture online. And you had to give in everything online and take the reading from online, so there were no excuses whatsoever. So in that respect, they were extremely strict, and there was no beating about the bush. They kept you on your toes, because every week you were assessed on something. And it does make you less lazy. It's not a question of leaving everything to the last minute, mm-hmm. or you have one assignment mm-hmm. for the end of the semester, and then exams at the end of the semester. It's just continuous assessment. And you learn a lot more. You learn a lot to absorb all the information that you need to take in.
So I think I can take it from that it was a positive experience.
It was the best thing I had ever done in my whole life, in all aspects. And it was the easiest thing I had ever done. I found no challenges whatsoever. No challenges. People ask me, but weren't you afraid to be on my... No. I blended in very easily because I used to live in the UK when I was younger. It was the easiest thing I'd ever done.
So things went smoothly from the organisational point of view?
From the organisational point of view. But during the end of the stay, the only challenge was I got stuck in Heathrow for 3 nights because of the snow.
Oh.
I got 3 months up in Eden with 3 months worth of luggage. But luckily there was a Maltese lecturer who was also doing theatre studies over there. And it was... he was so relieved to see a Maltese face because he could speak in Maltese. And that was the one time where I spoke Maltese for 3 months.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I was fascinated listening to all the accounts. Perhaps we'd better talk about very quickly about procedures, Angelica.
Okay. So as regards student mobility, students who are undergraduate, postgraduate and doctorate can apply, even those doing full-time and part-time. Students can go abroad for a minimum of 3 months and a maximum of 12 months. They can go either on studies or placements. If they are on studies, students can do credits or research on their thesis. And as I said before, if they go on their placements, they have to do training. The credits that they do abroad are then transferred, results are then transferred in our system. And the students do not pay any tuition fees, but they pay, for example, for photocopies, but those are not fees. And the students also receive a grant. Now, this grant does not cover all the expenses. It partially covers the expenses.
So they have to watch their
Actually, the expenses that students have are traveling, accommodation, and daily living transport. The call is open, and the students can apply. The deadline is 13th May, even for the staff. So there is one deadline for all the actions. And on the 3rd of May, we will do an information session at the KSU Common Room at 10 o'clock for students and at 11 o'clock for staff, both administrative and academic.
Thank you very, very much. Angelica and Maria from the Erasmus office, Julia, Matthew, Stephanie and Nicola, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's programme. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.